Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is the second day of 2016. 2016. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Let me be among the first to wish you and yours a happy, joy-filled, safe, and blessed new year. And of course, we're going to start out with a security issue. AVG, you had one job. The latest company making a scream is Netherlands-based antivirus software maker AVG, whose web tune-up add-on for the Google Chrome web browser promised to protect you from surfing to unsafe sites on the internet. Turns out, the software also exposed your browsing history and other personal data to any would-be hacker who knew how to grab it. The problem has been fixed, but it's unclear how many of the 9 million people who use the software might have had their information stolen. AVG confirmed the flaw and said it created a quick fix. As soon as we were highlighted to it, our first and foremost priority was to get a fix to market, said Tony Anscombe, who helps manage security at AVG. He added that they need more people doing that. He added that AVG's core antivirus software wasn't affected and the company is reviewing its processes to ensure its software is safe. The episode underscores the frustration many people feel about computer security. You think you're doing all the right stuff, keeping all your software up to date, installing antivirus protection. AVG, a computer security company, offers this software promising to help keep you safe while surfing the web. You should be able to trust them, right? It's not the first time this sort of thing has happened. Other security companies, such as antivirus maker Kaspersky, have been hacked in the past year. Hacking attacks are expensive, too. Verizon Enterprise Solutions estimated that 700 million compromised records from companies around the world led to losses of $400 million last year. In perspective, of course, that's about a half a buck a person. That's based on surveys of 70 companies, so the actual figure is likely much higher. For its part, AVG appears to have fixed the issue within a couple of days of its being written about by a Google security researcher, sending the software update just before Christmas. With any luck, that helped AVG avoid getting coal in its stocking. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is AVG exposed users' personal data? And your choices are, oh yeah, I got caught. I don't use their Chrome extension. I have no idea. And going commando, baby. So far, we have 27 people who have answered the poll. 48% of you don't even use the Chrome extension. Nobody said they were caught, but then again, 8 of you have no idea. So
good luck with that one.
Exactly. And we know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right there under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Click on that, and the second forum down is the poll discussion. And the first item so far is forum, and the forum is 2 Jan 16, AVG exposes users' personal data. And we've got two people who've answered, who've talked about that so far. You'll have a lot to say there. And, of course, you have anything else you want to talk about or you want to say more about that, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Just to bring up another topic, you know how we've always said backup, backup, backup?
We have said that.
Just a little, right?
Yeah.
Well, another thing came to light. All right. My Kathy had just gotten, she had the Galaxy S5.
Mm-hmm.
wound up getting this. Hers wound up going dead on her. Got a new one just before Christmas. They overnighted and boom, got everything in there. Excuse me. We took it over to the Verizon store and they were able to copy. They got the Samsung Swap app now.
Nice.
And they can switch everything over.
Yeah, people don't realize they have to back up their phones too in case
that's
you lose
what
stuff.
I'm getting at. Because just New Year's Eve, she's running around and it only dropped about 2 foot.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Brand new phone. New screen protector, everything else. And she got this case that they told her, oh, yeah, no, this will protect it really well. That screen got so shattered.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So we took it in yesterday, and now she has a Galaxy 6.
Ooh.
But a lot of the stuff that was on the phone.
Yeah.
Because the phone is totally dead. You ain't bringing it up.
Yeah, yeah,
no
yeah,
way, 16 yeah, ways from Sunday. It just ain't happening in this lifetime.
Yeah.
So she was using some of these other apps to take like notes and all this other stuff. Gone.
Yep. That's so, one reason I stick with the Google ecosystem. Everything, my contacts, my notes, everything is in Google, which is backed up in their cloud all the time.
Well, yeah, Verizon's same got the same thing. Verizon's got the same thing. Verizon's got the same thing you can do with their contacts, emails, messages. But when
you still
get
to check now and then, make sure it's working.
One of these other programs, though, you know, that you use, the side programs, you've got to check.
Yep.
And see if it's being backed up, because a lot of folks just assume it is, and it isn't.
Yep. Yep. I see that far too often. My wife has put me off every time I have a hard drive, a 3 terabyte hard drive on my network, a NAS, network attached storage device. And she's put me off constantly about, getting her, Mac on that thing so that it'll automatically back up. But I think this afternoon I'm just going to force the issue.
Well, I can say,
honey, let me borrow your computer for a minute.
That's about how it's going to have to happen. Well, that's right.
Well, that's all it takes. So,
let's go cook dinner or something.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I already heard enough.
Yeah.
I don't need more bruises and contusions.
Take some rum balls.
Yeah. We have before we get to the phones, we should talk about the fact that Dave has made his world-famous, I must say, rum ball recipe, and I'm about to try my first one.
But going back, though, you know, she's devastated right now, you know, because... And the one thing I don't get... It's okay? Fermenting for about a week and a half now, almost 2 weeks?
Holy moly.
Don't worry, there's no open flames here.
These are dangerous. Moist.
Now, one of the things we've noticed, especially on the iPhone, is that when you create a contact, you can create it on your phone only, or you can create it on your syncing service. So either the Apple iCloud or the Google Cloud, mm-hmm. Microsoft Cloud. And we're annoyed that that is an option. Because mm-hmm. people don't look at where they're creating their contact.
Well,
it used to be you'd create it on the internal SIM card or the external SIM card. And then when you changed phones, you moved your SIM and half your stuff is gone because it's on the other SIM card.
Right.
But what I don't get, though, and this has still got me perplexed, is, you know, she does a lot of things on Google Calendar.
Yep.
And a lot of stuff is missing. And I don't understand that because, you know, I can look at my Google Calendar, whether it's on my phone or on my laptop.
Well, you know, like Steve said, if you're not syncing it, you have to specifically go in and say, I want to sync this.
You can create.
We've got it so it syncs. Everything on Google syncs every night after 11 o'clock automatically for over our Wi-Fi. And why that didn't.
I don't know.
The other thing that you can do on Google Calendar is you can have different calendars on the service. Home, you know, work, you know, first kid, second kid, third kid. And we've seen sometimes you have to go to Google's website on the phone and turn that other calendar on because it may only show you the main calendar. And I'll see if I can find that link to post it.
Yeah.
To manage your phone on Google's website to tell it which calendars to show.
Well, yeah, right. She's only got the one. So, you know, that's
It's well, just, she may not. That could be a problem.
No, she does. That I already checked.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been going through putting all the apps back up for her.
Yeah.
And everything. Although we did do that because she was worried about not having all the apps, you know. So we sat there and I read them off and she made a complete list. So I was able, that did come back. So we were able to get that set, part set up. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's your fault.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We know that.
Well, like even the, but one thing I was glad of, like the key ring. I hate carrying those key fobs around.
Yep.
So I got key ring. It's a great app. And you can put all your cards in there. And she, I lost all those. I go, wait a minute. I log in. Because she did set up an account. She logged in. Boom. There they all are. I was a hero for a couple minutes.
Yeah, for a couple minutes. Really, that's all you can expect.
Now what about this?
Yeah.
No, gone.
Yep.
She's devastated. And I feel her pain. Because, you know, if anybody's had a computer and they didn't back it up and there was all this stuff on there. That's why we can't say enough. And now with the phones, folks, especially if you're using other little apps, make sure somewhere else it's being saved, or, you know, if they ask you to register, net, a lot of folks won't take the time. Nah, I don't need to. Take the time and do it. If it's going to be that important for you, because more and more of our lives are lived on these phones.
Because exactly
they are
right.
A computer, folks, whether you want to realize it or not. It is a computer in your hands, and it connects you to the whole world.
Right. It's 100 times the power that got us to the moon, as a matter of fact.
One thing, I don't know if you noticed, if you discovered this in your Galaxy. When you bring up your contacts, if you swipe them to the right, it makes a phone call. If you swipe the contact to the left, it will automatically open up a text message.
Oh, how interesting. I've not played with that.
Yeah, so if Kathy just discovered this. She just swiped it to the right, and all of a sudden it's calling that person. Automatically calls. If you swipe that contact the left, it goes to a text message.
All right, I gotta
try that
right
now, yep.
All right. Oh, and I have 3 new messages from somebody who knows I'm on the air right now.
Don't you love that?
Never mind.
You're on the air yet? You're on the air yet?
Exactly right. Exactly right. All right, we got to take a break, I think, yeah? 2 minutes?
Yeah.
All right, then we can at least start with the question of James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Hello. My question is, on the Google Chrome, is there a way to put the autofill button on there? Because you can't put the Google toolbar, right?
Put the auto what button?
Autofill button.
Autofill?
Uh-huh.
Autofill is built into Chrome.
You just click on a field and it should pop up in that field what it can autofill.
Oh, so when you're filling it out, it just automatically fills out by itself?
Right. What happens is this. You start filling something out and it brings up your autofill choices. You may have more than one.
Yeah, I noticed that. So you don't need a button then.
No, it's automatic.
Okay, and you can't put the toolbar on there, right? Everything's built in.
Well, you can add a toolbar if you want to, but you don't need to because it is all built in.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Yeah, I've discovered that autofill. I used to not trust it.
Yeah,
but it really has made my life
especially
so
if you have work and home and you know you got 3 different projects you're working on, so yep. You don't want it to fill the wrong one in.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just, it's the first break of 2016. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Joanne from Greece, patiently waiting on the line. Hi, Joanne. What's up?
Good morning, afternoon, whatever.
Whatever.
I have a short question and a longer one. The first one is, I have a file folder, and it has like 600 photos in it. They used to always be alphabetized. now it's backwards. It's the WXYZs are at the end and the ABCs are the other end.
Yeah, you change the sorting order. Yeah,
How do I do that?
You change the sort by clicking on the column you want it to sort by. So at the very top where it says name, you click on name, it will sort by name. You click on name again, and it will sort reverse name.
If I go to organize, is that where that sort by is?
Organize by details. There's no sort by command. You just click on the name of the column you want it to sort by in the list
view. So
if
you look at the actual list of files, at the very top you'll see name,
Size, date,
things like that?
No, I don't. Let me go back to the beginning.
No, you're not. Yeah, okay. You're not in list view yet.
Okay.
You're in. You're in.
I had that view before over here. Arranged by, and there was. No, that's the folder. Month, day, rating. And then there's a thing here at the top. The size of the icon.
What's it under details? You have to get to details.
Details. Okay.
Which shows you the list of all the files.
View. Okay. View details. Okay. Yep. View details. Okay.
And then now you have the columns for name, date, size, kind.
Okay. There's name, yes.
So you click on one of them and it sorts it high to low. You click that same column again, it sorts it low to high. So if you're currently sorted Z to A, click the name column again and it will sort it A to Z.
Okay. All right. Now I go to each column and do that to it.
Right, whatever column you want to sort by, you can click on that column name.
Right, okay. But you can only sort by one. So if you sort them by name and then sort them by size, name goes away.
Okay. Well, now it's got a check mark on A to H. So that one column on A to H?
I have no idea what you're looking at.
I don't know either. Okay, now my whole thing is in one big long column.
Right.
That should be the details.
Yep. So now I want to go name, and I want to do A to Z.
Right. So if you are viewing, if you go back to view and view them by pictures as opposed to by names.
Okay. Over here.
Are you in Windows 7 or 10?
7.
Oh, 7. Yeah.
Details. I think it did it. I think.
Yep.
FGH. Okay, the end of the.
Because there's another list view where it, instead of showing you one long list vertically, it shows you lists horizontally.
Hmm.
And that doesn't give you as much information.
Yeah, no, this did it when it was. That's good. Okay,
there you go. All righty.
Okay, now the other question. I am really, 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 really close to purchasing a Mac. I want to get the desktop version with the big screen where you can put the disk in it. Now, I've got a lot of stuff on my Windows 7, and I do Family Tree, Excel, and Photos, and Picasso. Will Excel translate to Mac?
You have to buy the Mac version of Excel, which actually came out before there was a Windows, so that's going the other way. Or if you buy a new Mac, you're going to get Apple's spreadsheet program, which is called Numbers. You get that for free when you buy the Mac. Some people will start with that and see if it does what they need, and then some people will buy Microsoft Office because they're familiar with it.
Yeah.
So that all your data files will transfer, but the programs will not. So all your Excel files, all your photos, that will all transfer to the Mac with no problem.
The data file will transfer.
Right. Okay. So all your pictures,
mm-hmm.
all your Excel spreadsheets, all your Photoshop stuff, all that transfers.
Okay.
But once you're over there, you cannot use the Windows version of those programs. So they were designed for a different operating system. Okay. So you have to purchase all of those programs over again, or download free equivalents.
Yep. Okay.
So, like, Apple comes with its own photo program called Photos, or you can download Google Picasa for free.
Okay.
Right.
So that's one thing we've seen over the years with Apple is that they include a lot of software that you end up needing to pay extra for on Windows that just comes with the Mac already.
Okay. So Google Picasa would come with a Mac version then.
No.
Okay.
Apple's Photos program will come with it, or you can download Google Picasa from Google's website.
Okay.
And that will work on a Mac.
Okay. All right. I'm still thinking.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough decision. But you're approaching it in the right way. You're taking a close and long look at everything and taking your time to make that decision. That is exactly the right way to do this.
Okay. I will probably call you back with some more
That's
problems.
That's why we're here.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanne. Good luck.
Yep. Bye.
Yeah, we are seeing people that Microsoft is essentially forcing you to upgrade to Windows 10. It's getting harder and harder to not upgrade to Windows 10.
Right.
And so you're going to have to learn a whole new something anyway. So you might as well look at Linux or Chrome or Mac and you know, learn something that hopefully won't force you to make changes later on.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vito from Chi Line, New York. Welcome, Vito. What's up?
Good. Thank you, Nick. Yes, I've got a regular computer.
Yeah.
And I'm using Windows 7, which I'm quite happy with.
Yeah,
and
too bad.
And I loaded momentarily this other program, which I hate immensely, Windows 10. So what I was able to do is when it came up again, and I right-clicked on it and I said hide it. The question is, when I have this KV3035583, how can I make sure it's never going to bring me to 10?
You can't.
You can't. Microsoft is adamant that everyone will be on 10 at some point. So right now, it is voluntary to move to 10.
And you that can just keep ignoring the upgrade button.
Right, and just keep ignoring it.
But there's no way to get rid of it.
Right. But eventually, it will. Your choices will no longer be upgrade now or upgrade later, or don't upgrade. The choices will be upgrade now or upgrade tonight.
Hmm.
So you will eventually be forced into Windows 10. That's just what Steve was saying a minute ago. A lot of people are angry about that, and therefore they're looking at Linux and the Chrome OS and the Mac as alternatives to running Windows 10.
Right. Are you saying, Nick, that if I had never even touched that KP thing, it's still going to force me over to 10?
At some point it will. That is what Microsoft is saying they're going to do.
That's horrible.
Now, we haven't seen it yet, but that is what Microsoft says they're going to do.
Probably just before that 1 year free expires.
Right.
Which is so what, April or May?
Right. The end of May, the end of June, I think.
June,
but
isn't...
at any rate, you know, you're good until at least April with what you've got. I know that's only 4 months. It seems like a lot now, but it'll go fast. The reality is that Microsoft is no longer interested in supporting old operating systems. They want everyone on Windows 10 because it's easier to support, it's easier to upgrade, it's easier to maintain only one version of the operating system. And so that's what they're planning to do. The other thing is that at some point, the numbers are going to go away. Windows 10 will just become Windows, and it will be a subscription-only service. That is to say, you will pay a yearly fee to run the operating system. Now, theoretically, it will cost you nothing to install it, but to upgrade it, make sure it's activated, et cetera, you pay a yearly fee. And that, of course, is Microsoft's ultimate goal for this, because knowing how many versions are installed, knowing they're all the same version, and knowing that the full install base will be paying them X dollars a year, they can then figure out just what their revenue stream looks like.
And I'm envisioning a point where people are going to stop paying, and then suddenly the computer just quits working.
Well, and that's the other side of that story. If you don't keep paying, all the stuff you have goes away.
Are you saying paying on a monthly basis?
A yearly basis, a monthly basis, whatever they decide. Probably yearly.
That's amazing. I mean, amazingly bad.
For you, not for them.
Yeah, it's really good for them.
What's your opinion?
My opinion is I've been running Linux for 10 years.
Okay.
You know, I actually bought a Windows-based machine because I thought I was going to be teaching Visual Basic, but mostly I don't even bother to pick it up and turn it on. I probably should at least charge the battery and update it.
Well, like I told you,
how many updates are going to be waiting when you turn it on?
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, what I'm going to do is I've got a Windows 7 machine also, and you know, I love it. It does whatever I want it to do. But within the next month, I'm going to pull the plug as far as hooking it up to the internet, and I'm going to get a Chromebook. Because I've more or less evaluated what I do on this desktop unit has very little to do with the internet, 90% of it. And the other little bit I can do on a Chromebook, and the Chromebook will give me the flexibility to move all around. Thus, the Windows 7 will keep running. It's a great operating system. It has been from day one when they announced it. It was stable as all get out, and my programs still work with it. So that's going to be my way of more or less cutting the cord with Microsoft, because even if it crashes, I can go ahead and put Windows 7 back on it on another hard drive. No biggie. I've got it ghosted anyways. And all my other stuff, which is important to me that I do on the internet, will be on this Chromebook.
When you say Chromebook, are you saying this is an operating system that can...
Yeah, Google Chrome, yeah.
Will actually let you go online and do things like that?
Yeah, yes, Chromebook.
I am running a Chromebook right here. The basic idea behind a Chromebook is it's a device from... Samsung makes them, Toshiba makes them, yeah. But it's essentially a device from Google. And it runs the Chrome operating system, which is basically just the Chrome browser. And through it, I do word processing and spreadsheets and databases and everything else I want to do, all out on the web. And I'm using it right now. I'm keeping track of who calls. I'm on the Soundbites website. I'm doing Google searches. I'm doing all that stuff. And the way you can determine whether or not a Chrome OS, a Chromebook, is a useful tool for you is to see how much of your day you spend inside a browser, as opposed to running programs natively in Windows.
And most people use web pages and search engines and email, and most of what you do is in the web browser anyway.
Right. Even if you use something like Thunderbird, obviously you can replace that with a web-based version of your email. If you use Excel, you can replace that with the web-based version of Google Drive's Sheets, which is their spreadsheet. I use their word processor. I've written two books using their word processor, and in fact, I've started two others. So it's a very robust word processor and does everything I need it to do. The basic idea behind the Chromebook is the one that I run cost me $200, and that's hardware and everything. It's got a 12-inch screen. It's got 2 gigs of RAM, which you don't need more, and it runs great every once in a while. In fact, right now it's waiting for me to reboot, and when I do that, it will update. So it's automatic updates. It doesn't get viruses. All the stuff I use, of course, is on the web, so that Google updates it for me. And if you went into the Chrome web store, you would see thousands upon thousands of programs that do everything from genealogy to audio editing to video editing to picture editing, name it, and it's all available there. So if you spend a little time...
And for cheap or often free.
Cheap or free. And so if you spend a little time setting up the Chrome operating system on your desktop... the Chrome browser on your desktop, to see how much of your day you can spend in that browser alone, you'll have a pretty good idea of what you can do with a Chromebook. And as Dave said, I'm the same way. 99% of what I do, I can do on the Chromebook. And then I have my desktop if I need to do one or two other things that I really... don't need to do on a desktop. It's just I'm used to doing them on a desktop.
Okay. What is the link to get to the Chromebook browser?
The Chrome browser itself, I think it's
Chrome.google.com.
Yeah,
Chrome.google.com.
Okay.
And that would let you download the Chrome browser and install it on your operating system as it is. Right.
So as an alternative to Internet Explorer or Firefox, Chrome is another browser. And then Google has created a whole operating system based on Chrome.
Right. Oh, and then they're touting their game, Lightsaber Escape. But if you go up to the top, you'll see download. And under download, you can download Chrome for personal computers or for mobile. Mm-hmm. Once you've installed it, it talks about the best way to set it up, how to install apps, various themes, various extensions. You can do cloud printing. So, for example, from this desktop here, I can print to my printer at home.
Okay. Oh, that's great. I appreciate your taking the time to tell me all this.
All right. Our pleasure. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the very first version of Sound Bites of 2016 on the world-famous Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Here's an interesting story. Facebook's making some of its users feel a lot older than they really are. The social network sent automated messages Thursday inviting some users to celebrate, and I quote, 46 years of friendship on Facebook with one or more of their online friends. That's a little odd, since Facebook only started in 2004, and some people who got the messages are in their 20s and 30s. Facebook blamed it on a software bug. It didn't offer details, but computer experts speculate the problem stems from a feature or quirk or whatever you want to call it in Unix, the operating system used in big data centers where companies like Facebook store information, or derivative of it like Linux. Unix starts its internal calendar on some computers at midnight, Greenwich Mean Time, January 1, 1970. That's moment zero, or as Unix calls it, POSIX time, or the epoch, or epoch, I suppose. Facebook's programmers, not paying much actual attention, just use the Unix epochs count from when you started using it. So the problem is that any number of people started using Facebook before they started keeping track of when people joined. So there are a lot of folks in their database whose start time is zero, or as they now figure it, 46 years ago. Facebook said its engineers are fixing the problem so everyone can ring in 2016 feeling young again. So did you or anyone you know get a notice that they've been friends with someone on Facebook for 46 years? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
That's like, who was it that invented, Al Gore invented the internet?
Al Gore invented the internet.
And that of course, brings up, you know, the end of Unix time, which is January 19th, 2038.
Right.
When the 32-bit register is full.
Right.
And all of us still using Unix then will have to rewrite all our software.
Well, theoretically, they'll update it to 64-bit at that point.
Yeah.
What's interesting is this puts me in mind of many, 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 many years ago. I got a call from a headhunter because I was at RIT at the time, had lots of students. He said, we need a student who's got 5 years of Java experience.
You mean Java that was invented last month?
That's exactly. It's 2 years ago. Yeah. I said, Java was invented 2 years ago. There's no, maybe the guy who invented Java, James, what's his name? Maybe he's got 5 years of Java experience. Literally no other human being on the entire face of the earth has 5 years of Java experience.
Didn't he go on to have a lot of children?
call them geese, yeah. Call them ugly ducklings. Nobody else on the entire universe has 5 years of Java experience. I don't know who you think you're going to find, but I will tell you right now, whoever says they've got 5 years of Java experience is lying to you.
You think?
It's just, you know, they want, we need a programmer who does this. We don't want new programmers, so you have to have 5 years of experience. The language isn't 5 years old, people. Similarly here, Facebook, not 5 years old.
There's always
not
something.
46 years
46,
old.
Yeah.
Every time daylight savings time comes along, New Year's, you know, ticks over, some computer system somewhere, you know, the iPhone has had their notorious daylight savings time bugs where the alarm doesn't work. It's been years, and they keep happening. Think of this stuff when you're writing a program.
Well, and that's just it. What they essentially did was somebody said, we'll pick the epoch number.
We have to pick a date they joined Facebook. And you know, so we'll, if they're there at the beginning or they're there before the beginning, it's just empty, so zero.
Well, and that's just it. They were there. They were before we started checking, you know, people's time. There are a bunch of people who are in as zero because we don't have their start date.
Yeah.
Well, nobody thought that on the other side of that, somebody was using the epoch number as the number of years you've been on Facebook. So if your number was zero, you've been on Facebook for 46 years.
Yeah.
For a program that's only 11 years old. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've been on Facebook for 46 years, even though you're only 23.
Well, you and your 23-year-old friend, add them together. There you go.
There's 46.
Well, so, all right, that's how you get 5 years job experience. Yeah. I work all day and I work all night.
It could be the new math.
Yeah. Could be the new math.
I mean, the way the kids do math nowadays, it's...
Carry the four, add purple.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Well, my when I was a kid, my mother taught me long division, and she taught me short division, and it all made so much sense to me. And when I got to school, and they were trying to teach, you know, you put down this number and you add this, and I don't remember which was which, long or short division, but the one they taught wanted to teach me was not the easy one, so I just used the easy one.
Yeah.
You know, it just made it wasn't better, but it was faster.
Yeah, I see, you know. Kids,
and it made more sense to me.
My grandkids now, the way they do some of the math, and it's like, it just seems longer and harder.
Do you realize the new math came out in the 1960s?
Yeah, shut up.
That was when the new
Get off my damn lawn.
Yeah. That was the XKCD cartoon this week, too. For, you know, you're feeling old. All, you know, these movies that came out 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Well, we just had Back to the Future, their 30th anniversary.
There's a school, I want to say it's Benoit College, and they have this list every year, things the incoming freshmen take for granted or don't know or, you know, have that we don't have, et cetera, et cetera.
The mindset list.
The mindset list. And every year, I just feel older and older and older. From it. It's really kind of horrible. It's things that we don't have any idea of what they are. Yeah, hybrid automobiles have always been mass-produced.
They have never licked a postage stamp.
That's right.
Because they're all self-adhesive.
Well, we were talking about that yesterday. The post office...
We don't even know what a postage stamp is.
The post office just issued Star Trek stamps from the original series.
Yeah.
First, most kids today don't know from the original series.
No.
Second, they don't even know what a postage stamp is or what you're supposed to do with it. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, little pictures you can paste on your wall.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have any idea.
It's all the old philatelists.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. We were talking about it at work as a channel changer.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was the channel changer.
Yeah, that's right. What we're talking
and there were
about.
Only four channels to choose from, and so get them changing.
You had four?
Yeah. I remember when WUHF, Channel 31, came online, and it played my kind of TV show.
That's right. We had 8 and 10. I remember 13 coming online. I remember 21 coming online.
You are old.
I am old. We were the first people in our neighborhood with a television set, so my mother insisted on it. And so we were the most popular people in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
We had people we didn't even know in our living rooms. That's not a joke.
Yeah, no.
My wife's father thought that color TV was a fad and would refuse to buy a color TV. So she had to go down the street to watch Star Trek in color.
Yep. Hello there, sir. I remember watching the very first episode on of Star Trek. My mother had been working, and so she bought a portable TV. And by portable TV, I mean it weighed about 25 pounds, yeah. But it had a handle on it.
It had a handle on it, yeah.
So I brought it out on the porch, and I was sitting there watching it. And by the time the first commercial came on, my porch was so crowded that people were hanging off the side of the porch watching the television. It was kind of an amazing thing. All right, we have about 5 minutes maybe to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's up?
Thank you, guys. Well, I did get a new computer, operating system 10, and I've got a question for you in regards to the security function. Right now, it came preloaded with a McAfee for 30 days of no charge.
Yeah.
But I also noticed somewhere that there's something called the Defender. And if I did not want to purchase the McAfee whole suite because it's running the antivirus, it's running the firewall and all that stuff like that, how do I, A, turn off or get rid of McAfee, and then I can always download a free program that you guys recommend, AVG or something like that. But where do I see that in the OS X control panel?
There is an add remove programs.
Uh-huh.
And the easiest way to do anything in Windows 10 is to do a search.
Uh-huh.
The first problem is finding the stupid control panel.
Right. you can actually just search for add remove programs, but you can also search for control panel.
Okay.
And believe me, that's, you'll eventually learn the shortcut keys and all of that stuff. But just search, just click in Cortana or ask Cortana. Hey, Cortana, open the control panel. Okay. If you really want to be lazy.
But that's not an issue. Actually, I know how to right-click, and it comes up right off if you want to call it the old start button there.
Right.
But as far as getting to activate Defender, is Defender basically Microsoft's antivirus and firewall and all that stuff like that?
Yes. When you open that, when you bring that up, what you'll find is that it's under security.
Uh-huh.
And you can turn on the antivirus, you can turn on the firewall, you can turn all that stuff on. Everything's little sliders now.
Okay.
You know, they look like little buttons that you slide over.
Right now it says Windows Firewall can prevent, well, it says that these settings are being managed by vendor application, McAfee personal firewall, private networks, and guest. And I'm trying to click on the little drop-down box, and it won't let me. So it sounds like McAfee has those locked.
Right. McAfee has those locked. You would have to either turn them off or, better yet, uninstall McAfee, and then you will gain control of them back again in Windows.
Now, how do I turn on Defender? Or if I decided not to download AVG, what's your take on Defender?
Defender is fair. It's not great. It's not horrible, but it's not the best. I don't think it's the best.
Recently on that.
I did a recent DNC column on this.
I'm AVG. I've been using that on the my older computer for a number of years. I've been happy with that one.
Yep. It really is dealer's choice, you know? I'm not a huge fan of Defender. It's certainly better than nothing.
And at least you realize that the McAfee is a trial. So many people buy a new computer that come with these trials and don't realize it's a trial, and then 6 months later when the trial expires, they're suddenly infected.
Now the other thing is this: what about the Windows firewall? I've been using that on the old machine also for a number of years, and I've not had an issue with the Windows firewall.
Windows firewall is actually better than Defender, because it's just firewalls are fairly simple. To get kind of right. You block certain things and you're good.
Okay.
It's not the most robust firewall. It's not as easy to use as a programmable firewall if you really know what you're doing. But for the average person, just turn it on. You're as protected as the generic firewall will make you, and it's fine. It's the Defender that is not as aggressively updated as some other company's programs.
Offhand, do you know what the annual fee for my continuing to use McAfee would be? Possibly?
Offhand, I do not. I'm sorry.
Okay. So that's that. All right, so the bottom line, to recap, I first have to uninstall the McAfee suite and then download whatever program I decided to go with, AVG or Avast or something to that effect.
Well, no. You download first.
Correct. Yes.
Disconnect from the internet.
Disconnect from the internet. Uninstall McAfee.
Now we're talking.
And then reconnect to the internet.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cart can't go before the horse.
That's exactly right. It's just a matter of getting it in the right order.
Yeah, and so that is a big thing for all you people that got new computers for Christmas. It probably came with an antivirus software that was probably a demo or a trial, 30-day, 60-day, 90-day trial. You know, probably on the higher-end machines, it might have been like a one-year subscription. But virtually all virtually all of the commercial antivirus software are now going to those one-year subscriptions. So if you've got a trial, it stops updating and stops working properly in, say, 30 days, and then it won't know about new viruses. So make sure you go into your antivirus control panel, whichever one you got on your machine, and check your expiration date and check the date it was last updated. We get machines in the shop all the time that expired 2 or 3 years ago, and there were probably a bunch of warnings back then that it was about to expire, and you say, oh, yeah, I'll get to it later, and later never comes.
Right, and then it stops asking you because it's expired and you don't think about it anymore.
Yep. And then the new virus comes out and you get infected.
Yep. So those of you who got a new computer for Christmas, you've got another 20 days. Probably maybe a little more, but 20. Let's call it 20 days. Call it 21 days. Call it 3 weeks to decide whether or not you want to keep that one or go on to something else. And there are a number of free alternatives. There are a number of pay alternatives. A lot of people are saying nice things about Panda. I've not tried it yet. I've not played with it myself, but certainly you'll be able to find something that will make you happy at a price point that also makes you happy. So,
and that's one of the ways the computer companies get the prices down is that, you know, the AV company paid them to put the software on it.
Right.
And a lot of the time, it's okay software that gets put on it. But every now and then, there was the Superfish. Lenovo put on their computer. Was that Toshiba?
Toshiba,
yeah. So it came with spyware pre-installed, basically. Oh, Lenovo had the root certificate that anyone could get because the password was default.
Right, right. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But you're going to get a chance to do it again because we're going to take a slightly longer break, but back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. So you get a whole lot more of Dave Enright, a whole lot more of Steve Ray, and way too much of Nick Francesco on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's the very first edition of the 2016 series of Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great. And never forget this, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side, and Happy New Year.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm still Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the first show of 2016.
That roughly means close to 27 and a half years.
Yeah, pretty close. Actually, Sound Bites will tell us that. 26 years, 3 months, and 29 days. 26 years, Seriously. 3 months, 29 days.
Mm-hmm.
Golly, Ned, we're getting old. I mean, great. I'm just so thrilled to be doing that. No.
and to think in the beginning, you didn't think it would last very long because nobody's got questions.
Nobody's got questions.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that was our friend Bob.
Yeah.
This is not going to work, you know. Nobody advertised this. We're not. I said, Bob, just open up the phones. It'll be fine.
Remember that night with Virginia Butler?
Oh, Ginny was funny.
Oh, she was panicked.
She was panicked. She was. She, it was the same thing as with Bob, only worse.
What are we going to do if nobody calls?
I've got. I have some questions, but I don't think I have enough for an hour.
And we sat there.
27 said, years later.
Don't worry about it. I mean, she was. She was stressed. And then once they said, oh.
Well, this was the TV show.
Yeah.
She was, nobody had done any advertising at all. And she was convinced that people weren't going to call in. We opened up the phones 8 seconds later. The bank was full.
Yeah.
It never stopped being full all the years we were on the air. It was pretty funny.
Same with us here.
I still get people that say, oh, I watch you on TV all the time.
Yes, I do too. Yes.
That's how we've been off for 10 years.
All you can say is thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
But it's just like here. You know, people find us, and, I'm sure you guys get the same thing. Oh, I miss you guys. Why? We're still on. Where?
Yep, that's exactly the conversation, too.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, here's another news story. Microsoft said on Wednesday they will now notify people if their accounts have been targeted or compromised by a government. We're taking this additional step of specifically letting you know if we have evidence that the attackers may be state-sponsored, because it is likely that the attack could be more sophisticated or more sustained than attacks from cybercriminals and others. Scott Charney, a vice president at the company, said in a blog post. Probably not in that accent. Charney said Microsoft does not plan to provide detailed information about attackers or their methods because evidence may be sensitive. Sensitive. The company, it's an old Bugs Bunny cartoon. He's sensitive. The company already notifies users if their accounts were compromised, but it did not specify if a government was thought to be behind the attack. Facebook and Twitter have recently implemented similar policies. State-sponsored hacking has become a focus for security researchers, corporations, and governments in recent years. North Korea, for example, has been fingered by the FBI as a primary suspect in a major attack on Sony in late 2014. The United States has increasingly pointed its fingers at China for sponsoring, we're looking at you, China, for sponsoring cyber attacks, but many other countries have been known to engage in similar tactics. Beijing has long denied it is involved in hacking. So, our question to you, have you been targeted by a foreign government? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I had a friend who got targeted by a foreign government just because her name was the same, apparently, as somebody who worked for the State Department. And they just picked the wrong person because they're idiots.
Yeah, heaven forbid John Smith get into trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Denny Crane.
Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're safe just because you don't work for the government or you're retired or whatever it might be. If you've got the same name as somebody, they're a little sloppy work on their part and you end up being the one who gets caught. So you got to be very careful of that, and it's really nice that Facebook, Twitter, and now Microsoft are all willing to tell you when you've been hit, and particularly if it's been a government-issued hit.
Yeah, I got a nice email the other day from a the Presbyterian Church in Dublin thanking me for attending their planning meeting for some new expansion they're doing. I'm a famous actor, Stephen Wright.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I've got a new movie coming out, too.
Good for you.
We invited to the premiere?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we all go?
Yeah.
I'll go the red carpet. I'll do that. I'll rent the tux.
Yeah,
what the
same
hell?
Here.
I'm good for it. I've been
He's going to be in War and Peace.
Oh.
He's the Kerrigan.
Is he what?
He's Prince Kerrigan.
Oh, nice. We like Stephen Wright. He's a good actor. At least you're famous and also good actor.
Yeah. But I'm always the buddy of the leading man.
Well, right.
Although in V for Vendetta.
Or the leading woman.
V for Vendetta, he was third billed behind Hugo Weaving and Natalie Portman. So I think that's his highest billing.
That's not bad.
Not bad, yeah. He's also 20 years older than I am.
Well, yeah, that. Oh, yeah, that. It happens. I've been getting a lot of thank you for signing up for such and so. Somebody somewhere thinks their email address is asknick@gmail.com. And I don't know why, since that's my email address.
Yeah.
But whatever, they think they're me, and good for them.
Maybe it's Ask 'em Ick.
Yeah.
Get enough letters in there, you can run into somebody else.
Exactly. So, at any rate, the
Google yourself. You have to be careful. And see how far down it goes before it's actually you.
You should do that quite regularly. Actually, always Google yourself regularly, because you'd be surprised at some of the things you just might find.
I like your quote on that comes up in Google. If you think I'm famous, you need to get out more.
Yeah. you should, it's very easy to Google yourself. Just go to Google, put your name in, hit enter. It's not rocket surgery. It's just real easy to do. And you can see what the world thinks of you. Sometimes it's kind of frightening. Maybe you don't want to know, but you'll be able to find out.
Well, after my late wife passed away, I had to, for close to a year and a half.
Yeah.
Have to go, because I kept getting these letters that you owe this doctor bill, you owe this one, this and that. And it was for down like New York City, down New Jersey, and everything else. I keep telling them, no, it can't be her. Well, it could be, you never know. She might have, she's been dead. And what's the name you're looking for? And Lori was Lori R. Lynch.
Yeah.
And this was a Lori J. Lynch.
Yep.
So it was close enough, they figured, oh, we'll try up
there. J.R., who cares?
Yeah. And I kept telling them, no. And for a year and a half, they were.
And then it goes on your credit report?
They were throwing threatening letters. That, well, you got it. You're responsible for it. I go, no, I'm not. I says, sorry, the day of that bill, she's passed away. It's not happening, but like you say, you got to stay on top of that type of stuff, because even dead people, they'll pull, scammers will try to pull that up and use that.
Yep. Because if a person dies and you get to their stuff fast enough,
mm-hmm.
you can take out credit cards, you can get a social security number, you can do pretty much anything you want to do.
Oh, yeah. And who's going to do it? Especially if they're, if they didn't have, especially the elderly, if they didn't have any family members.
Right. Or the family members just don't look.
Yeah. They don't contact them. It's like,
Once a parent goes, you mourn them, but you never think to go back and look at their credit reports or any of that stuff.
Yeah, especially if they've been hacked.
Exactly. You just don't look. And so, consequently, those are the best.
Yeah, and those are the ones, again, folks, in protecting your data, even if you got some elderly folks, kind of watch over them, too. Because sometimes, and we hear it all the time, how they're, they're easily had. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're pried upon more, because these folks will call up and say, "Oh, your computer is infested, and you're gonna lose all your data and everything else, and the integrity of it has been compromised, and we need to get in there and do this, and then $350 later, they're out the money and they've been scammed and their machine's still infected."
The best thing to do in a situation like that is to remember there is no legitimate company that will call you about this stuff.
No.
Just hang up. If you then feel the need to verify that, call us. It's a real easy thing to do. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And talk to us about this scam, about this issue, about this call you got, and we'll help straighten that out.
Yeah, and even, or you can email us. We all have email addresses. I'm Dave at jazz90.1.org. And, Dick and Steve are the same.
901.org,
Yeah, 901.org.
And most people have some relative they know that knows a little bit about computers, or at least a little bit more than they do. And we've always said that too. You need to find someone that you can mentor, no matter what your level is.
Right.
Find someone you can mentor.
Folks, well, I don't know a lot, but you know what? If it can help your elderly friend or family member avoid being had, because it is, believe it or not.
You know what we're going to start seeing now? Things that purport to come from Facebook or Twitter or Microsoft that say you've been hacked by a government agency.
Mm-hmm.
Click
oh,
here.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's going to be
sure.
That's going to start
made
being
little
bad.
Green yeah. Apples. Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be bad. Mm-hmm. Not sure how we handle that. I haven't seen one yet.
Yep. There is a website available. Have I been pwned? that you put in your email address, and it will check to see if your email address has been in any of the 300 million leaked accounts from Home Depot and Target and Adobe and everyone that has been hacked recently. You can see if your email address has been compromised. And if it has, you probably want to get a new email address because you never know
yep.
what bad guys are going to do with that information.
Yep. And, of course, email addresses nowadays are free. You can get free ones from Google and from Yahoo and a whole bunch of other places. So you want to be very careful about using an old and possibly compromised email address. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chuck. What's up?
Good afternoon and Happy New Year.
You too.
I have a Windows 7 question.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I'll be using my system, and all of a sudden, it'll come to a crawl. If I go to the Task Manager and look at processes, there's a SVS host, service host.
Yeah.
Process that's sucking up all kinds of CPU usage. If I right-click on that, go to services, what you find is about a dozen different yeah. services that it's managing.
Yeah, the problem here is that Microsoft did one very stupid thing.
Only one?
First time, huh?
Yeah, one very stupid thing as opposed to a million stupid things, which is that they funneled all the internet queries and et cetera through a program called Service Host.
Yep.
So you can never actually tell what program is doing what to whom.
There you go.
Out of the task list.
That's my question. Apparently, yeah. It sounds like there's not a real answer.
Yeah, well, there is, and that's Dance the Security Tango.
Okay.
If it comes up with a clean bill of health, then the likelihood
Would you have to do that when that particular service is running, so
no.
that it knows what it's looking at, or not?
No. You okay. can run it at any time you want, and in fact, running it correctly. And running it completely should catch whatever is out there doing that to your system.
Okay.
It may be completely legitimate. So if you come up with a negative result.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. When I look at that, I get names that are real, you know, they're something that should be running. But
yeah, it's basically every program that's accessing the internet,
right,
just about.
It's just sucking up so much CPU
right.
time that
yeah.
I can't move probably for 4 or 5 minutes, and then it kind of stops, and mm-hmm. then I can go on.
Right. And really, without looking at your machine fairly exhaustively, I couldn't tell you what programs those might be. But
yeah.
on the off chance, definitely Dance the Security Tango and make sure that it's not a hidden virus taking over your machine.
Okay.
Oftentimes, it is an internet plugin, typically the Flash plugin,
yeah.
Sometimes the a Java plugin, trying to do something, and that can tick up your process
so much. I've had no other issues with the machine, so I'm tending to think it's not any kind of viral or anything of that nature.
Right.
I'm thinking it's legitimate. It's just, you know.
Well, the only way to be sure.
I can run the whole thing and wait until I'm done.
Doesn't hurt to try.
It's certainly, you know, just for peace of mind, dance the tango.
Yep, okay.
Other than that, just live with it, I guess.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
That's a scary sight.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are just grooving to the tunes.
And if you're
on Soundbites.
If you're watching the video, we're sorry.
Yeah, we are. We're very sorry.
Hey, we have already said we have faces for radio, and that's where I leave.
That's exactly right. Oh, well,
view at your own risk.
That's right. This is a sad story. We were just talking about seven actors from Babylon 5 have passed. And Ian Murdoch, founder of Debian Linux, died this week, much too young at the age of 42, in unclear circumstances. No details regarding the cause of his death have been disclosed as of yet. This is not NCIS. We don't have Abby instantly analyzing all of the clues. It takes a while. In a blog posting, Docker merely stated that it is with great sadness that we inform you that Ian Murdoch passed away on Monday night. It's a tragic loss for his family, for the Docker community, and for the broader open source world. We all mourn his passing. The San Francisco Police Department said they had nothing to say about Murdoch's death at this time. A copy of what is reputed to be his arrest record is all but blank. Sources close to the police department said that officers called in responding to reports of a man, Ian Murdoch, trying to break into a home at the corner of Steiner and Union Street at 11:30 p.m. on Saturday, December 26th. Murdoch was reportedly drunk and resisted arrest. He was given a ticket for two counts of assault and one of obstruction of an officer. An EMT treated an abrasion on his forehead at the site, and he was taken to a hospital at 2:40 a.m. early Sunday morning, December 27th. He was arrested after banging on the door of a neighbor in the same block. It is not clear if he was knocking on the same door he had been attempting to enter earlier. A medic treated him there for undescribed injuries. Murdoch was then arrested and taken to San Francisco County Hospital. On Sunday afternoon, Murdoch was bailed out with a $25,000 bond. On Monday afternoon, December 28th, the next day, Murdoch started sending his increasingly erratic tweets from his Twitter account. The most worrying of all said, and I quote, "I'm committing suicide tonight. Do not intervene, as I have many stories to tell and do not want them to die with me." At first, people assumed that his Twitter account had been hacked, but in retrospect, it is likely that he was the author of those tweets. Cause of death still remains unknown. His death is a great loss to the open source world. He created Debian, one of the first Linux distributions, and still a major distribution. And he also served as an open source leader at Sun, as CTO for the Linux Foundation, and as a Docker executive. He will be missed. So I guess the question here is, did you ever use Debian? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Rather than dwelling on the negative of the fact that he has passed and he may well have killed himself, let's dwell on the positive of the Debian operating system.
Which is fantastic.
Which is a phenomenal product. It is the basis for Ubuntu and many, many, many other Linux distros. It is a clean, solid piece of work. He and his then-girlfriend, Deborah, I want to say Lynn, that's where the name came from, Debian. It was used by many, many people, and because it was purely and completely open source, it also became the basis of many other versions of Linux all across the spectrum.
And people that are so creative and so gifted often have troubles in real life and often die early. So it's very sad and unfortunate that, you know, we lose people like that that are so creative and so gifted.
Yep, that's exactly right. But he helped create an amazing piece of work, and we are grateful that we had him for the time we had him. Now back to the phones. Our next caller is Henry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's up?
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
My question is, over the holidays here, I got a brand new Dell Windows 10 laptop computer. It's a nice,
congrats,
nice machine. 12 gig memory, 2 gig terabyte of hard drive. But the thing is, this is my first laptop. Before I've always had a desktop, and the screen is a little small for me. I'm wondering, is there a way to hook this up to the 21-inch monitor I have on my desktop. The laptop has a HDMI port on it, but the my monitor is not HDMI. It's a flat screen LCD monitor, but it's not HDMI.
Does it also have a DVI port on it?
The laptop?
The monitor.
The monitor?
Because a lot of them will have VGA.
The monitor is about 10, 12 years old.
Yeah, then probably not. A lot of recent monitors will have DVI, which was the computer digital video interface.
Yeah.
And most modern monitors have switched to HDMI, which is the television digital interface, so you can easily plug it into a TV.
Right.
There are adapters to go from VGA to HDMI. They're $100 or so.
Okay.
Which is almost what a new monitor will cost.
Yeah, well, and you, frankly, you're not going to be impressed.
Okay. What are the pixel
HDMI
dimensions?
HDMI down to VGA is kind of ugly.
Well, I'm not sure if this is VGA or because it doesn't look like the same same.
The 15 pins in three rows is the VGA connection on the monitor.
Okay, maybe that is a. I'm just saying it doesn't look like the one that I remember being on my real old cathode ray tube monitor that I know was VGA. So, I mean, that was a smaller one. But maybe this is VGA.
Yeah,
I don't know.
VGA is about half an inch wide. The DVI is about an inch wide with about 40 pins on it. So
yeah,
you may be using the DVI and not know it. DVI one to thing, HDMI is a lot easier.
Right. One thing you can try to do is figure out the model number of that particular device. Look it up on the internet and download the manual for it.
The monitor?
Yeah, that'll tell you what exactly is available on the back.
Yeah, I've been. I think someplace I have the manual for the monitor that came with the computer and that, but I haven't been able to lay my hands on it. Okay, right. But you're saying there might be an adapter, but it's probably won't work that well.
Well, you're not going to be happy with HDMI to VGA because it downloads it an awful it downgrades it an awful lot. It also makes it a little slow to pick up once it's started actually doing the connecting. So you probably in the long run are really not going to be terribly happy with that.
Yeah. But if you have an HD,
they say it costs about $100, so for that much, I could probably even go buy a small LCD.
Yeah.
TV yep. that,
exactly.
That, right. And if you have an HDTV now, it will more than likely have HDMI ports on it, and you can mm-hmm. use that television as a display.
No, my TV is still a cathode ray tube.
Ah.
Wow. Okay, good for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it still works. Why should I throw it out?
Yep.
Exactly. But consequently, that's going to make it hard to connect anything to it.
Oh, yeah. Even the cable's getting harder and harder anymore.
Yeah, that...
Okay, well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
On the good side, he does have a phone.
Yeah, it's probably a landline.
Yeah.
I just read a statistic. What was it? Only 8% of the people polled have a landline only.
Right.
48% of people have a cell phone only.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that we're shifting more and more towards cell phone only, not landline. Yeah, one guy said is that the only reason he's got a landline is because it's cheaper on his cable TV bundle, phone, internet, and yep. telephone. It's cheaper to have the phone he never uses than to not get that bundle.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Mac from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mac. What's up?
Hi. I'm trying to build fill out an envelope from a template in Pages, and I'm not doing very well. I can't get my information into the return address, and just wondering how I could do that.
What type of template is it?
It's in Pages. It's.
Is it a Pages document, or was it like a PDF originally?
Well, I go into Pages and I look under the templates and I pick an envelope.
Oh, okay. You're using the built-in templates.
Yeah.
Is if I remember right, that it uses your address book to load in the addresses.
Oh, so I have to go to my address book and put in my own address, my return address?
Right. That should be a, let me see if I can bring pages up here. That should be a, in the preferences as to which return address to use.
Oh.
Or you can, you select the text tool, which looks like a little A, and then draw a text block on the template where you want to put your return address text.
Well, I don't see that. I've got the elegant envelope up, and in the toolbar, there's a paintbrush and a plus and all that.
Yeah, one of the tools should be...
Where do I see the A?
Yeah, one of the tools in the toolbar should be a text tool to create a text block.
Do you have any idea what it looks like?
It usually looks like either a little A or a little text insertion cursor.
Or a T.
Maybe T for text, yeah. I'm still trying to launch pages here.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it. Maybe that's part of my problem. Also, sometimes when I say if I point to the return address, I have the black bar that says cut, copy, delete, and comment. And I have no cursor there, and my keyboard doesn't show up. So I don't have the A. So
are you on? Are you?
When I have to get up there first.
Doesn't show. Are you on a computer or a tablet?
I've got the iPad too.
Oh, okay, that's completely different. Ignore everything we just said.
Oh, okay.
I was talking about the computer version.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't remember the tablet version offhand, but there should be the same thing. There should be a way to add a text block in Pages. I don't have Pages downloaded on my tablet. Let me try searching for that.
There's the picture of a wrench, but that doesn't... It says document setup. Would that be it?
Yeah, you should have insert, table, chart, text, shape. No. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's still the computer version. All my searches are coming with the computer version, not the tablet version.
So I have... change your tracking, document setup, settings, set password, and all that. Under document settings, I get, I had typed in my address, but doesn't go in. It isn't in the right place, my return address. And there's blocks in there, and I can't scroll around without the keyboard showing on the screen.
Yeah, the keyboard only shows when you're in somewhere to type.
I have an external keyboard. Do you think that would help me?
No, the keyboard only shows when you're in a text block.
Okay.
So you have to make the text block first.
Okay, so I point to a block. There's three blocks going across horizontally, and I could type something in there, but then how do I get it to go in the right place?
You have to create the text block exactly where you want it to be.
Okay, well, it's not going to happen here. So, hey, do you have it up on your computer, on your tablet?
No, I don't have it on my tablet.
Okay, well, I'll fool it some more.
Yeah, I'm trying to Google around and find a picture of how to create a text block. Now, since it's a template, I would imagine the text block is already there, and you just have to tap on it.
It isn't as it would be on the my iMac. I mean, my iMac, I could scroll to it and click on it and be right in a place I need to be, and then start typing. This doesn't have. It doesn't have what I need.
Create a template then. Don't use a template. Just use an empty word processing document, and then you can make it look like anything you want.
Yeah.
So if the template doesn't work for you, just use a blank document.
Oh, okay. But I could still print in the same place I would for the envelope?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll give it a try.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
All right, thanks. It's very frustrating when you don't see what someone else thinks you should be seeing.
Yeah.
because one of you's in one place and the other one of you's in the other place. It's very hard for that. And I was on iCloud, iPad, create text block, and I see nothing on how to do that. It's just ridiculous.
Well, and that's what's surprising, too. If he's using a template, the text box should already be there, and he should just need to tap on it, and the keyboard will pop up and start typing.
Right. Well, who knows what he did? He may have removed it, in fact.
Yeah, he could have accidentally removed the text block. Yeah, so... But then if he saved that over top of the template might be gone, too.
Right.
Yeah, so just start... Yeah, start with a blank page, and then you can put the text wherever you want.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Victor from Aranaguay, New York on the line. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Hi, guys. When you were talking about the people that use cell phones and don't use telephone books to look up stuff anymore, it brought back right. a nightmare to that I had with whitepages.com. Well, what happened one day is I get a phone call from somebody, and they want to order a pizza. And I said, how'd you get my number? I looked up on whitepages.com. I go, well, hold on. I got a problem with my oven. Call me back in 10 minutes. Okay, so I call the pizza place up, and I go, hey, you got a problem with whitepages.com. You're one digit off, and I'm getting a call for a pizza order. The guy goes, it's not my problem. So wait a minute. I can't get a hold of White Pages. You've got to get a hold of them.
Yeah.
He goes,
unless you want a pizza, I got work to do. I says, okay.
So how
sure
much,
enough, that guy called back.
Now how much business is the shop going to lose now?
Well, you got to listen to the rest of this. Well, the guy that I told to call back in 10 minutes called back, and I gave him a hell of a pizza order.
Yeah.
And then there was about, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 other people that called up. And then I got a phone call from the owner of the pizza establishment. And he goes, are you placing orders for pizza for me? And I go, people call my house and want a pizza order. I can tell them anything I want with my number that my parents had since 1950.
Right.
So I said, you've got to get a hold of White Pages and take care of it.
Right.
I go, if you don't, I'm going to keep taking pizza orders. So the guy says, give me 24 hours. I said, not a minute longer. It's 24 hours. If I get a call after 24 hours, I'm going to keep taking pizza orders because I can tell anybody whatever I want on my phone.
Right, your phone.
And sure enough, the number was changed.
That's funny. When I was a kid, our phone number was one off from the convent at some school. So I would get phone calls from people wanting to know if school was canceled because snow.
Yeah.
It was actually easy because, and of course, you know, I'm a 9-year-old kid, so my voice is like this anyway. I sound like a nun. So I would call up that school, find out if school was closed, and just tell people yes or no. Because it was easier than saying you've got the wrong number, blah, blah, blah. Here's the right number, blah, blah, blah. It was faster to get them off the phone by saying school is closed than it was to get them the right number. But yeah, I feel your pain. It's once somebody's got a wrong number out there, getting it changed requires the right person. And whoever answered the phone at the pizza parlor clearly could not have cared less.
Yeah, the manager, he didn't care. He could care less when I first talked to him. And, you know, then I knew that somebody was going to call me later on because I knew I was going to get more orders. And I wrote down the people's phone number and what they ordered. And I gave him, I'm telling you, some hell of a deal. Mm-hmm. Hell of a deal on pizza and wings.
Sure.
Yeah. And then after, you know, the guy was really, he was very happy that he called me back after and said, are you getting any more phone calls? And I says, no, I'm not. You made the change. Like I asked you to, if you had done it the first time, you wouldn't have been getting all the phone calls.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, he says he was very apologetic. And actually, he said, you know, I wanted to come down, he'd give me a free pizza.
Nice.
I did.
At least.
I went down and I got a free pizza.
Of course yeah. you did.
Yeah. And that was my story. So I just thought I'd share it with
That's
you.
That's a great story.
That's
Thanks, Victor. Appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah, we've seen that happen with phone digits or published, you know, one digit off or something.
Oh, yeah.
Who was it? During during Cuomo, the son, during yeah. his election campaign, no one can spell Cuomo. So 1-800-Cuomo, it's either his election campaign or porn.
Yes.
If you spell it wrong.
Yes, you get porn. That's
so when
exactly
you're creating
right.
your 800 number, make sure you do misspellings.
Pretty much any 800 number.
Yeah, any
number.
Random 800
yeah,
number.
We'll take you to porn. So mm-hmm. will pretty much any random yep. thing you type into a web browser.
Random
yeah.
web browser. So when you're looking at your company name, you know, register misspellings of your name.
Well, mm-hmm. we've seen people have to do that. You know, 901.org yep. as opposed to
yep, that's Apple.
Jazz901.org.
Apple's tech support number is SOS Apple.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make sure people said SOS because S0S is porn.
Yep. Because Apple didn't register it and
somebody
entrepreneur
else
somewhere yeah. said, yeah, this will be good.
Yep. And for Mac in Rochester with his iPad templates, I got the iPad version installed. If you tap on the text block, then you can start typing. That lets you type in what you want. And there's a plus sign between the paintbrush and the send icon. A little plus sign will let you add a new text block. On the web version, there's a big T to add a text block, and that's what I was remembering. But since the less screen space on the tablet and the
right.
phone, there's
right.
a plus sign to let
Which
you
drops
add.
Drops down a whole series of things.
Yeah, you can add a spreadsheet, you can add a chart, you can add shapes, you can add text, you can add photos. And so the third button is a square that lets you add a shape, and one of the shapes you can add is text.
Perfect.
So it's all in there.
So Mac,
it's just
if
hiding.
You're still listening, that's how yep. that goes for you.
And what you may want to do is go to the iBook store, which is another icon on your screen, and download the Pages for iOS manual. So there's a Pages for Mac, there's Pages for iCloud, and there's Pages for iOS, and they're slightly different between them. The nice thing is the documents are compatible so that you can create a document on the computer, you know, edit it on your tablet, and then present it from your phone, you know, plug your phone into a projector, and, you know, that's all you need to do now. But it does mean that there are slight differences in how each program works and where the menus and buttons are. So and a lot of people miss that when the Mac comes, there's a not even a pamphlet anymore. There's a getting started guide, which is like a card.
Right, which is nothing.
Which is nothing. But you go to the bookstore, the iBook store, and you can download a full, you know, multi-hundred page manual for free from Apple. Also, there's a lot of third-party companies will sell you manuals. There's the famous missing manual series. This has been such a problem in the computer industry that companies stopped including paper manuals because it cost them money to print them. And then for a while, it was a PDF on the disk. And now most software you download directly from the internet, so you don't even get a disk. So you have to download the manual separately. And so there's a bunch of there's a conspiracy theory for a while that Microsoft intentionally made their programs hard to use, so you'd buy the Microsoft handbook.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I found though handy with the manuals, excuse me, is usually I'm looking for a particular section.
Yeah.
So I can go into right. you know go to get the manual, the PDF, and only print the part that I need. So I have it in hand, and I can refer to it when I'm doing something.
Right.
And I found that little hand. Instead of printing off, you know, 121 pages, and yeah, I only right. need, you know, a couple pages of it.
I and hardly print anything anymore. I look at it on my tablet while yep. I'm doing something.
And since it's electronic, you can search the page. So yep, you don't have yep. to rely on what they indexed. You can yep. search for what you want.
Yep, mm-hmm. yep, yep.
Oh, it makes a big difference.
And I have to tell everybody, we were looking at the iCloud stuff. And I went into my iCloud account, and I suddenly realized for years, since my daughter was like 9 and I got her first iPod, I would buy her one song a week. I told her if she was, you know, part of her allowance, if she was good, I'd buy her one song a week.
Yep.
So for decades now, I've been buying her one song a week. And she finally said, Dad, I really need to get off of your account and just put all the music under my head. I said, okay, fine. What I didn't realize what she had actually done, however, was changed my account to her account. Changed the username, changed the password. Because she's got all this music on it, it's all her music. I've never really used
it. So it may be better for you to make your own account separately anyway.
That's what's going to happen now. That's what I have to do now.
Yeah. That's what we used to see in the olden days, is that parents would buy music for their kids, or you'd have one account for the family. And all of your kids' crappy music would be in your library.
Right. So now, and I have very little to nothing, close to nothing in my account. So I can create a new account without any real problem. And I mostly need to do it because people are calling up and asking about the iCloud software pages and sheets and things and business. So I can do that and get this. I didn't realize that she had done that, so I just went to log in. Now I'm like, I know my password. This is my, oh, yeah, I see what's happened. I get it. Now I know.
That's when you want to hit the screen. Yes, that is my password.
Yes, that is my password.
Type it slower and more deliberate.
Yes. Yes.
And then realize your daughter changed it.
Yes, it's exactly right. It's exactly what happened. So it'll be fine. I'll just create a new account and it'll be fine. I had a couple of little test things in there that are really exactly zero loss. So big deal. iCloud works great on my Chromebook. Microsoft's
That's actually pretty amazing. That on the Chromebook, that you can still use, you know, intense web applications like Apple's iWork and Microsoft's Office. It's just a web page.
It's just a web page. Yep. So I can use iCloud. I can use Office. Of course, I can use Drive. I can use them all right from my Chromebook, and there's no problem. All right, that music tells us you've wasted another 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. So thank you for all of that. Continue to join us during the new year. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back in just 166 hours, a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known and unknown universe, with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 55 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.